Hello, everyone, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap. It's July 6th of 2016. I just woke up, but we're going to do Weekly Manga Recap now. Isn't that right, Chris?
It's absolutely right, Nick. We're going to do some Weekly Manga Recap. We're going to talk about manga, and usually there's like a tangent, wackiness, things like that at the beginning. There's no time for that this week. None. I've been checking my schedule. We have literally no time for silliness today. Unless you could pencil that somewhere in between Toriko and World Trigger. But I don't think we're going to be able to. So, I think just no nonsense today.
Uh-huh. Whatever you say.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay.
Are you playing Pokemon Go? Because I have discovered there are no fucking usable Pokemon in my room at all. And I don't want to go outside because
you don't want to go out into the world now.
It's scurry out there, Nick. I don't want to get kidnapped and end up in a coffin like that Exxon executive in the 80s.
Or like Ryan Reynolds in that one movie.
I think that was supposed to be partially based off of that. But it must not have been, because that dude definitely died. Then again, I didn't see the Ryan Reynolds movie, so he may die in that too. I don't know.
Ryan Reynolds dies in that movie, spoilers.
Aw. Some dude out there was like, I was 7 movies into my Ryan Reynolds no spoiler movie list watching list. Why?
Anyway. Yeah, we do have manga to talk about this week. I'm sorry. I'm going to be a little bit out of it while we start up. I'll probably get more into it as we go along. I'm sorry. I don't know. I think we should just start the recap. Or should we come out with a recap?
Yeah, let's just dig right into it. Black Clover.
Page 68. Awakening. Last time, Noelle pointed her wand at Veto and said, put the cookie down, for my friends, stop hurting my friends, and so on. She remembers as this chapter starts, Fuego Leon's words that being weak is not nothing to be ashamed of, but staying weak is. Or at least I think that she's actually remembering that. We get that flashback bit, but
yeah,
this is her big get strong moment, which of course would not be complete without her already impossibly short skirt fluttering around to the point that you have to wonder if she's wearing any underwear whatsoever under that thing.
I used to be so annoyed at her. I used to be infuriated by this outfit, but I recently discovered another character who irritates me more, Nick, from the mobile game Tales of Link. There's a character, and she just annoys me because, you know, she's wearing like the bikini briefs, but then she taunts us by wearing what seems to be leggings that don't connect to anything. They just cover the legs, but they don't connect to what she's wearing at all. Not even her boots. It annoys me, Nick.
They've got like glue on the inside of them to prevent them from sliding down the legs.
I don't care how they connect. I just don't get what the purpose is. They don't connect to anything. Were you this desperate for leg warmers that still expose your very upper thigh, yet also your ankle?
It's called absolute territory, Chris. Come on.
I fucking hate Japan sometimes.
Is it Zettai or Ryoiki, I think. I probably didn't pronounce that quite correctly. Anyway. So, power surges around Noelle. Demands that Veto let Kahono go. By the way, Kahono is kind of an important role in this chapter as, you know, the hostage, you know, Noelle's friend, or super good friend that she only just met in this chapter, giving her, you know, the influence to push past her limits and so on. She's not in the introduction character screen, because Yuno is.
At least Veto is. Like, how annoying would it be?
At least Veto is.
Like, if he didn't get in, but Yuno did.
What? I wasn't in that chapter at all. I only got my arm blasted off. So, Veto observes, wait a minute, are you a royal? And Noelle says, yeah, but what's that have to do with anything? And she introduces herself as Noelle Silva of the Black Bulls. And Veto goes, ah, I knew it! You're from the most corrupt clan! What, the Silvas are corrupt? No. No way.
To be fair, we know that they're, and nobles in general, aren't very good, but we've seen enough of Noelle's oldest brother to at least get the impression he's not a complete dickbag. He's a rude asshole, but as far as the people who treat Noelle like shit, he's the one who seems to do it the least, or at least is not as big of a dickbag as everyone else. So, seeing that someone's insinuating they're worse kind of has some weight to it.
You have to wonder if maybe that's historically, or based on reputation, or what.
Well, he explains it in this chapter.
So, Veto also starts unleashing his power. A whole bunch of it is concentrated around his right arm. And he invites Noelle to use all of her sinful mana. And he will still defeat her. But Noelle says, well, even if, you know, regardless of whether or not you challenge me, I'm going to defeat you anyway. And she unleashes Sea Dragon's Roar, which summons this giant wave of water in the shape of a dragon's head. And this huge two-page spread as it flies across the battlefield towards Veto. It's a really cool-looking sequence, honestly. Because just Noelle in one corner of the page, and her own the backlash from her own unleashed magic is starting to blow her backwards, her hair and her skirt flying behind her. And also, there's a giant fucking water dragon's head flying across the battlefield.
It's pretty sweet, because the next, like, three pages, then two, are essentially completely without dialogue, except for, like, sound effects of people like, rawr, rawr. So you just kind of get to see this action of what definitely seems to be one of the most devastating attacks in Black Clover thus far.
Mm-hmm.
Not many have ended in dismemberment.
Veto punches it with his magically reinforced arm, but it clearly overpowers him, and then keeps on flying past him and actually blasts out of the system of caves that they are inside. And the people who are gathered around the water temple are looking up at it going, is that the sea god? But I do like that effect, that it just keeps on going after it's hit him. And then we cut back to Veto, and his entire arm, like, and part of his bicep are gone and are just bleeding everywhere. So Noah's like, yeah, take that! And Yami is thinking, oh, wow, she, like, killed her limits with that one. And he's thinking to himself, wow, I had no idea that she was this strong, that she could be this effective an attack mage. And Veto starts to freak out a little bit, but he experiences a flashback to where he met with Leashed, and he invited him, you know, to come along with him, because the people of the Clover Kingdom should despair, not you. And we then get flashes of a scene where the Silva family apparently came to his home, his home city or home village or what have you, gathered around what looks to be, well, I guess you can't tell from that distance. We're gathered there for the Red Wedding.
Essentially.
You can clearly see it looks like a Silva because of the weird hair. And Veto, I guess, a young Veto, saying, you know, take care of my little sister who is pretty apparently the bride in the wedding. And then burning buildings, corpses everywhere.
Bloody hands.
Yay! Well, because Veto survived, and you just see his hand from his perspective reaching out.
I'm glad they did that, because otherwise it'd be like, how was I... Like, I know he says it, but I'm like, I feel like the Veto clan needed to all look like him. They needed to all have, like, bare arms and shit. Like, how do I know? I'd be very interested to find out the why to this scenario.
Leash totally did it.
It's very possible, because I'm like, I mean, look, I get it. Yeah. Rich people be evil, but it still seems like a weird...
And now that I have married this woman, probably for political reasons, I'm going to kill you all.
I'm going to murder everyone.
Then we just get this text as Veto proclaims, I'll kill them, as a third eye opens in his forehead. And he then says this wild look in his eyes, wow, you managed to draw me out, human. And of course everyone's freaking out. They're like, why is he, what's with that eye, and what's with this magic surging around him, this eerie feeling magic. And Veto starts to use his magic, but after he announces it's mythical beast magic, the name of the spell is in these weird twisted runes, runic symbols. You don't actually know exactly what he's saying. And then a circle appears in the air, and flesh starts to regenerate from his stump, and an arm just emerges from the wound. And Yami is flabbergasted. The High Priest also is, and they say magic doesn't do that. Even the best recovery spell in the world will just close wounds. That is all it can do. But he just grew a new arm back in an instant. So Noelle would be in trouble normally. But she also thinks to herself as she defiantly holds her wand out, she doesn't have any mana left because she spent it all on that giant, huge dragon. Which, understandable. She was very angry at him and didn't unleash a lot of power.
It was a pretty sweet dragon.
So she's got nothing to defend herself with as this huge blast of energy suddenly surges out from Veto. And blasts another hole in the temple and goes outside. But fortunately, Asta's there! Yeah.
Yeah, I'll say this. Normally, the ask to save, you know, comes as a savior thing can be a little bit annoying, but, you know, truth be told, we've actually been having quite a bit of a break from Asta, you know, within the several spans of chapters we've had. You know,
it's only been 2 chapters!
No, I mean, consider that the chapter with Gaush was there, which took us away from Asta. Last chapter was essentially focused on Kohana and Kyoto. We had that chapter with Magna and Locke. I mean, there was an ass of stuff between there. But just the point being that... And then, you know, this chapter mostly being Noelle. It's... I'm fine with Asta being the hero who saves the day. He's the main character, after all. It was just... It's refreshing here to get a chance to enjoy the rest of the cast. So I don't... I'm fine with it. I think it's actually kind of cool way he shows up here. I like the way he's drawn to in that shot. It's an angle you don't see, like, the savior pose in too often. So, it's perfectly fine he comes in here. I love it if Noelle still got the final blow in it, but she looks awesome, so it works.
No, he has to cut the spell in half so that it didn't incinerate them both. Yeah. I'm getting in a rut with this, I'll admit. Like, of the times that Asta has come in to save the day, this is probably the single coolest. But even so, I'm just getting so sick of him. I know that is, like, it's interfering with my ability to critique this series objectively in any way, shape, or form. Because Asta just shows up and I'm like, ah! Why is he the main character?
Well, it maybe it'd be easier if this series was just called Asta. But I thought it was a really cool chapter. The bit about the sea dragon's roar and having it, like, shoot out of the side of the building and, like, all the citizens are like, holy shit, it's a dragon god, kind of actually felt very reminiscent of Oda's sort of storytelling, where he takes the elements of the world and builds it together with the action to create those big moments, like the shadows in Skypiea. It's not perfectly on that caliber, because it's not like we've had much time to know this culture or anything like that, but you can at least see the narrative strength there of being like, oh, you tied all this together really nicely. I liked Noelle's attack. I liked how devastating it looked on Veto. I like Veto having more to do and having a backstory. And I like the way everything kind of played out and got together. I think it all worked pretty cool.
The flashes with Veto were very good. Noelle really, really hurting him with a big, impressive attack was good. And then him doing something crazy with seemingly forbidden magic in order to recover from it. That's also good. And then he gets to the end and just like, well, the chapter's no longer perfect.
You know what? I think...
Like, I know, it's unfair of me, because I'm impossible to satisfy as long as Asta is showing up at all in Black Clover.
Like, there would be, I don't know, Mitt Romney Genie shows up and offers you the wish of Black Clover, you're like, oh, I just kill Asta off. Like, it's like the weirdest manga. But like, remember Black Clover where Asta was the main character for like a year, and then he just spontaneously died, and everyone else took over as the lead? Like, yeah, that was weird. Why'd that happen? You're just like,
go. No, he just randomly got super cancer and then fell over.
He couldn't cut that out. Couldn't cut magic cancer out, apparently. You know what? Maybe Asta's gonna be a little bit like John Cena, Nick, where you're gonna find him insufferable, he's gonna always win, he's gonna be the annoying. But eventually, Nick, he stays around long enough, you respect what he can do, and then he does like this really touching video about America and about what American citizens are. And you're like, I like you, John Cena. I'm all turned around on you. I'm going to forget about the Marine, and I'm going to hope you make better movies from here on in.
You realize there's a problem with that.
What's that?
Asta doesn't have a real life.
He could. There you go.
Someone like manages to bring the characters Black Clover to life, and they go around the real world, but also get together in order to do the Black Clover show.
Yeah, they gather together to do chapters each week. It's pretty amazing.
It turns out that Yami is just kind of an asshole who beats his wife, but gives inspirational speeches while swinging a black magic sword around. So you're like, oh yeah, he's so cool. Oh, but he's kind of an awful person. All right. Okay, so.
A very quick discussion on Bleach, I imagine, in and out. And then right over to Fairy Tail, where we'll spend 3.5 hours, I'm sure. That's where the length of this episode's going to be.
So Bleach has this this color page. I say color page because it's mostly black and white anyway. It's actually drawn in a pretty cool style. Penciled out image of Juhabak and only his eye and, well, his eyes actually, I should say. Like, his right eye visible under his hair, and the eyes of his power surging around him have any color to them. In the original Japanese chapter, there was a little blurb on the page that said, oh, you know, the story is counting down only blank chapters until the end. Like, the symbol that actually had the number was blotted out. However, we found out recently with the release of Bleach Volume 73, which came out on Monday, that Bleach Volume 74 is going to be the last volume of the series. And about 5 chapters or so that are going to be in Volume 74 have already come out. So if we assume that Volume 74 is going to be the same size and length as the other volumes of Bleach, that means there's only about 6 chapters or so left of the series.
About 5 or 6 chapters. The last volume could be longer. Usually a volume's about 10 chapters or so long, but they have been longer in certain situations where it needs to kind of fit.
It's entirely possible that it could be longer, but also given the fact that this chapter and the previous one before it were just titled The End. Yeah, we've had this, you know, promised for some time. Bleach is coming to an end soon. Bleach is coming to an end soon. And now it finally seems like, okay, Bleach is actually going to end. Now, I have no idea how the fuck this is going to actually close out in 5 chapters, but oh boy. I'm looking forward to ranting about how stupid this arc turned out to be.
It's a very interesting sort of development to me, because it definitely seems... This wasn't planned. It was not like Kubo's like, all according to plan, because it's very quickly like, all right, we'll just condense these 19 different plot lines I kind of had going for a while into, like, one. You know, as we've said, like, there's 5 or 6 chapters left, and there's still no real explanation for what Aizen's doing in this, or, you know, the Fullbringers, or the various other, like, members of the Soul Society world that have been kind of, like, why Kira's a robot? Is there going to be, like, an explanation? Like, I know there's an explanation in the book, but just a lot of plot lines that are out there that you're like, I don't know if we're going to have time for this. And I can't... it's just very surprising to me, because it definitely seemed like Jump and Shueisha were kind of giving him carte blanche to just finish Bleach at whatever pace he wanted. And apparently that's been rescinded or something. We don't know what's happening. It definitely just seems like an odd situation, because Kubo has definitely not been pressured to finish too much before this, or else we probably wouldn't have had a month and a half for the Shunsui and, you know, Mayuri fights before this.
Well, and if you look at what happens in this chapter, you can't get the feeling that, yeah, some of this was just fucking rushed.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got some theories on things. Maybe we'll get into it once we talk about the chapter some more.
So last time, Jihabak had thoroughly beaten the crap out of Ichigo. Announced he had the power to just absolutely manipulate reality. And then he closed the chapter by getting ready to take Ichigo's power away, which he does so at the beginning of this chapter. And Ichigo himself announces, I can feel it actually fading away. I can feel my Quincy power disappearing. I can feel the hollow power that was mixed in with it disappearing into light. And there's actually this pretty kind of tragic representation of this, which is, you know, the Quincy power, of course, belonged to his mother, so there's an image of his mom fading away into white. So it's like, oh, his one connection that he had with his mother is gone now.
Teardrop.
That Quincy power he's had for all of... God, how long has he had that? I don't even know, because, like, I always have such a hard time, like, figuring out how long ago certain chapters took place. The first time we saw him use it, I think, was when he had that brief fight against Katnip and the others. But he's only used it, like, then and for his fight with Jihabak, really, hasn't he?
More or less. I don't think he's had too many other opportunities to really do anything with it. I was going to say, this final arc in Bleach, I think, has been going on since 2012?
It has been, yeah.
God damn, that feels so long to me.
Well, and it's weird because Ichigo's done so little. Because, you know, he showed up in Hueco Mundo. He kicked the jail guy's ass. Kirgo or something. Kicked his ass. Showed up for the battle in Soul Society. Got his ass handed to him. Went away to train. Got beaten up a little bit more up there. Went back down to Soul Society. Didn't actually beat anyone. Went back up to this place. Got his ass kicked by Askanaklavar. Got his ass kicked by Jihabak. This has not been a very good arc for Ichigo.
He hasn't looked good.
Just been getting his ass kicked constantly. And this is the latest... In 4 years, like, the most important person he's defeated was, like, literally the least most important member of the Vandenreich. Jeez.
Yeah, basically. That's a bummer.
Anyway, Ichigo collapses. Jihabak starts laughing triumphantly as a giant wave of darkness shoots up from his form and starts to mushroom into the sky. Meanwhile, down in another level of the palace, Hashvalt stands over a not looking so good Ishida, and he says, "Oh, well, you can still move, I see." And Ishida kind of rolls over onto his belly, and he says, "I'm like them. I thought I've always remained calm, made decisions based on your so-called balance. But Ichigo's an idiot, so he can't do that. If he wants to help, he'll just go help. Orihime's also an idiot. Chad's an idiot. Miss Kuchiki's an idiot. Abra is an idiot. You're all idiots!
You're all idiots!
So, but he wraps this all up by saying, but if I look like I'm the same as those idiots, then that makes me happy.
It's kind of a touching little moment there.
It is nice. And Hotfoot's like, why would you even say that? That doesn't actually benefit you in any way, shape, or form. I mean, have you actually grown at all while being with them? Considering how long you've been with them, you should have actually grown a lot more. And if friends are there to heighten one another, it's not them, but His Majesty you should risk your life for, because he bequeathed you, your shrift. But Ishida says, well, given the choice, I chose to be with them. There's no self-interest there. There's no right or wrong. I just did it because we're friends. And... okay. That's a nice little moment. I like that, honestly. Because he's like, this isn't about me being strong, or this isn't about me doing what's right or wrong. I'm only on their side because we're friends. And that's... It goes against what we knew about Ishida at the start of the series, and it goes against what Ishida claimed about himself when he joined up with Jiobak. So, really, this is, I guess, the last attempt at closure for Ishida. Poor guy didn't get really to do very much. He tried to set off bombs, and then they didn't go off. So Ishida's role in this arc kind of got fucked over by this apparent sudden ending. But at least he got this little moment to say, I have grown as a character.
It's shameful that this is, like, how little Uryu this entire arc had, considering it was supposed to be the Quincy arc. It's kind of just sad to think about.
Follow people around, doing nothing,
pretend to be evil. That never went anywhere.
Fired a warning shot at Ichigo, then tried to set off bombs which Hotfoot already knew about and stopped, and then got his ass kicked and had to be saved by literal Deus Ex Machina. Well, not literal Machina, but literal Deus Ex. Anyhow.
It's infuriating to think about.
So, Hotfoot gets a dark look on his face and he says, alright, then that means you have no intention of forsaking anything, even though you were accepted by His Majesty. Then at least forsake your life, Uryu Ishida! And raised his sword to strike the finishing blow. And I do like seeing that how angry he is about this. That Jiobak brought Ishida into the fold, and Ishida had no intention of becoming loyal to him. And because of Hotfoot's absolute loyalty to Jiobak, and also what we know about him, that he gave up his friendship with Baz B in order to continue serving you, Bak, whereas Ishida is saying, like, no, I'm going to stick by my friends. You get a little bit of understanding as to why Hotfoot is so pissed off personally with him. Anyway, he's dead now. Not Ishida, Hotfoot. Because a giant bright ray of light comes down from the sky, and both Ishida and Hotfoot are like, what the fuck's going on? And we cut away to where Hizugai and Byakuya are still attempting to fight with Gerard's giant form. And suddenly a giant wave of light hits him, and his form disintegrates into a giant skeleton, which collapses onto the ground. We cut back up to Jiobak. Who's summoned a giant portal behind him, and he says, so long, Ichigo. I no longer need you or my children, the Stern Ritter. Watch from where you are, the side of the Soul Society and the living world being crushed by me. So, that whole thing which he did in between, I guess, the two halves of this final battle, where he just, aside from his elite guard, he just
obliterated everybody.
Just took their powers back. Well, he's taking it back from Ichigo now. He's taking it back from Hotfoot and Gerard. That's it. Like, okay. And from Lil Barrow, I guess, too. Although we don't see him. Because Kira's not important enough. So, the reason why Byakuya and Kenpachi and Hizugaya didn't just defeat Gerard was...
Obviously.
And I would have disagreed with your assertion that this was clearly not planned, this was clearly not rushed, if not for this bit here. Because the side fights just end. For basically the one most built up, fleshed out villain in this story is just dead now, seemingly. Unless it turns out that there's a reveal and he somehow managed to survive this. Because we
how are they going to address him, though, in five chapters? Like, how much time is it going to possibly spend on him?
I don't believe they are. I mean, I'm just saying, I'm just going to cover my bases. There is the possibility that maybe he didn't die from this. Because Lil Toto and Giselle managed to survive this attack. And Basby.
Question.
Yes.
Yuubok says, I don't need my children anymore, and steals back all the powers and presumably maybe kills the only Quincy's that are left, and has already taken Ichigo's powers. So, why didn't Uryu die too? Because he also has a shrift granted by Yuubok.
That is a good point. I don't know. Well, you can't really see the way...
his power is the antithesis, so that means the beam would never go towards him!
I don't know, because we do very clearly see the light, like, surrounding Hashvault.
Yeah.
You know, the jagged edges of blue vein are surrounding him, but we also cut to Ishida a couple of times, and it doesn't seem that, like, they're surrounding him. So, I don't know.
Fair enough.
Anyway, Renji and Ruki arrive on the scene, and Yuubok bothers to stop and look at them, and he says, oh, well, with your wounded bodies, I doubt you can even take a step from there. And they're like, well, we were just climbing upstairs, so I think we're good.
No, you're too tired.
You're too tired now. I've declared it.
He's like doing the Jedi mind trick on them. He's like,
you are too tired. I have manipulated you.
Like, that's one of the six powers you don't have. That and urban empowerment. That's the two you don't have. It's like, oh, I'm getting that then.
But if you want to come after me, then come. I will leave this gate here. If you come after me out of respect for your bravery, I will give you a magnificent death. I shall single out the moment of your greatest happiness in the coming future and kill you then. I'm going to wait until you are old and withered and have your grandchild bouncing on your knee while you tell him awesome stories of that one time you shot a bazooka at Godzilla and killed him. And then I'll kill you.
Yeah, laying your dunces.
Oh, by the way, at some point in your future, you will kill Godzilla with a bazooka. It's pretty badass, honestly.
Yeah. See, it's not all bad with me as your living god. I do some cool things for you, Ichigo. Don't say I don't do things for you.
Anyway.
He's like, now, if you're going to go through my portal and encounter me, make sure you create a save here, and then finish off any side quests that you might have still left unfinished, because once you step through, you are in the end game. You cannot return.
You had best make sure you have plenty of revival potions on your person and are leveled up sufficiently. I'm a challenge level 7 to character.
Yes. And make sure Ichigo has his ultimate weapon, which I guess at this point would be his 19th Bankai. Make sure he has that. Otherwise, I'm too tough.
Please note, I'm immune to most forms of crowd control. Anyway, bye!
Peace.
So, Bleach suddenly slammed on the accelerator, it looks like. As Yuubok is going on a portal to somewhere? Is he going to the real world? Is that what he's doing? I don't know where he's going, honestly.
I mean, they're
flat
in
out
the,
say
they're
what
like,
the portal is for.
They're essentially, well, they've recreated it, but they were essentially in, like, the throne room of the god of existence. I don't know
right,
where you
this
really
is the
go
place,
up from
this
there.
This is the place that Aizen was trying to reach when he was, you know, getting ready to make the key with by slaughtering off Karakura Town. So, they're there now. I can only assume Yuubok is going back to the human world through this portal, because he doesn't flat out say where he's going. He does say, you will witness the side of Soul Society and the living world being crushed by me. So, I assume he's going to the world of the living, but he doesn't actually say that exactly.
That's the point.
Rookie and Renji rush through the gate, and they're like, ha ha! I have taken us to the acid dimension!
I got you! Please! And he just floats away. They're like, oh, he got us. Oh, all more villains should be using this acid dimension. Blackbeard, get over here! Check out this acid dimension! I got you too, bitch!
I shall be the only villain.
I'm gonna be a serious conqueror about it. This is a strange chapter, but I feel a lot of that's just because we're very kind of quickly having to get acclimated to the end of Bleach, as opposed to here's another fight, here's another situation, here's another character who needs to get their closure from the series at this point in time. And particularly the fact that it really is something that has some focus on Ichigo is kind of jarring to me, just because we haven't had that in so long. Usually it's just like, oh, Ichigo's a, you know, one-panel transformation at the end of a chapter, or he's just a passed-out body in the chapter at some point. Like, you know, this is something that actually kind of deals with him a little bit, so I guess that's another part that's jarring. But I also kind of like somewhat of an indication of where things might end up because of this. You know, at this point, Orihime and Ichigo are collapsed there. Rukia and Renji just showed up here. And because Hoshwald's dead, I don't think there's anything stopping Uryu from coming along. And fuck it, we don't have time to deal with those statues. My hope is that, because it's also referenced in this chapter in Ishida's speech, we might see, like, those six core characters of Bleach kind of reunite. Maybe not for the final fight. I don't think it's Power Rangers where everyone's going to need to team up. I'm sure Ichigo's going to get some bullshit power from his dad, and that's going to give him the strength to go in and fight there. But I like the idea of getting to at least see those six characters kind of reunited one last time.
I'm imagining Ichigo facing down against Jyubaku, who is, like, growing gigantic for some reason, and Ichigo's holding out his sword like this, and he's trying to fight off Jyubaku. And then he has the spirits of his friends appear behind him and grasp the sword together with him. And then he goes, Moon Crystal Power.
I was going to say, isn't that a Sailor Moon thing? Oh my god, that's genius though. Can you imagine it? Kenpachi was like, what if I use two hands? Ichigo goes back, he's like, what if I use 12 hands? That'd be a pretty sweet ending. We're going to miss out on some things, and I think definitely some stuff's going to be rushed. I feel there are a couple plot points that just have to be addressed still. I imagine the Fullbringers will, and the Aizen stuff will. I can't say if anything else will. Maybe we'll never see
Halibut again. I'm going to say no to the former and yes to the latter, because, like, even if Kubo was like, and Aizen gets his own individual fight and had to completely cancel that, there is no way he can leave Aizen just sitting there.
I feel like
there's no way.
I feel like at some point the fucking, even if they don't have a chapter, there's gonna be some bullshit thing where it looks like, I don't know, maybe Yuabok's like, ah, killed you, Ichigo, and that's when Tsukishima fucking like pops out of his shadow like, oh, did you bookmark or some bullshit like that.
There's gonna be something. Like, sacrifices himself to defeat Yuabok so that he can have a flashback about how good a person he actually was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, can you imagine that? Like, at the end of the series, fucking Aizen, like, helped out in this one fight, so, like, alright, well, we're not gonna completely release you, but we're gonna reduce your prison sentence to only 20 years, and when you get out, you know, the fifth seat captain spot may be open for you, and Shinji's just like, what the fuck?! It's like, look, chill out.
I'm still alive!
Shake, no you're not. Fifth seat's open anyway. And Mo, I don't want any sass from you about promotions. The sword can strike twice.
Okay.
I have a quick theory, though, Nick.
Good.
What if... Because I'm operating under the assumption that someone has told Kubo, wrap it up, B. Like, just finish it up. They finally... have said, just get through there. what if part of that, because it doesn't seem in Jump's nature to just abruptly end it, especially after they've been patient with them for 4 years. What if it's like, hey, end Bleach.
And put it in Jump Square.
Well, put a sequel series in Jump Square. I'm just wondering if that's maybe the case that's going on. Because there's still a lot of story left of Bleach. It's very possible a sequel series could come about from it. And putting it in another magazine, they're definitely trying to pump that up, so...
Let's just see where it goes. I don't want to imagine that possibility.
Nick's like, I don't want to imagine this dark future where that fucking Bleach Christmas Carol bullshit play starts having more and more actual truth in that future prediction.
Let's do it. Fairy Tale.
Alright, Fairy Tale chapter 492, Older and Younger Sisters, which features Mary Jane and Lasana on the front. It is not all that shameless and fan service-y.
No. I mean, Mary Jane is, like, wearing, like, shorts, but Lasana's just there and just...
Women wear shorts,
I have the mind of an 8-year-old!
Yeah, well, you know what? Some girls like teddy bears, some girls like wearing shorts. It's fine. At least there's, sensible attire, and they're not making out. That's, like, the two pluses I was able to draw from that. So, last time, Fairy Tale...
I'm surprised that Hero hasn't ever done an incest fetish bit.
I feel like if I looked hard enough, I could remember one or find one, but none jumped to mind. The other Fairy Tale girl from that spinoff series, whose name I'm not going to bother remembering, sent that message to everybody saying, go north and basically protect Mavis. And that's what everyone's doing, and there's a weird amount of, like, whiplash, because some people are like, oh, hey, I see this happening, and because she's, like, telepathically linking everybody, Gajil says something, it goes over the airwaves, and Levy and Lily Panther here, but it's interjected with, like, other members of Fairy Tale, be like, yeah, back to the guild, woo, woo, and then it's just, like, Levy crying in happiness because Gajil's alive. I was like, I don't know, I might have saved that for two separate moments that the stupidity, happiness of Fairy Tale members, and, like, Levy realizing, oh, love of my life isn't dead.
Honestly, like, this whole sequence just makes you think of how much more effective this could have been. What if, instead of seeing Gajil alive literally two chapters after he died, we didn't see Zira and Gajil at all? We just closed the chapter with everyone hearing Zira's voice and being like, who is this? And because it's weirdly played for laughs, Zira's whole appearance, because she showed up in front of Gajil and was like, oh, Zira is here, whom you won't recognize if you didn't read that once. It's a spin-off series. And then they have the comedy bit where she's shy, she keeps hiding behind a tree, but then she gives the big speech through the mental, airwaves. And then we find out that Gajil can speak with everyone through her, too. And she's blushing because she's had to give this big dramatic speech and she's shy. So, she could have had a lot more dignity in all of this, is what I'm saying. A lot more, an air of refinement and mystique about her. If we had just not actually seen her.
You could even
if we had
done
just heard her voice instead.
A really cool cliffhanger at the end of a chapter 2 where it could still have this. She could still have that moment where she kind of fumbles and you hear Gajil's voice, but make that be the cliffhanger where we just see this other voice and nobody really reacts to it except for Levy, who just says, like, Gajil. Like, put that, you could put that same mystery in there, but then you at least get the suspense of, like, is it actually him? Maybe she's just hearing things. And it would be something that would work well in the anime too, because you'd be able to hear the actual voice actor doing the voice, so
it's just something that could have been done better, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And didn't they do this a little bit before? I'm trying to remember. I know this has been done in a whole bunch of other series. Like, Naruto did it in its final arc as well. But the telepathic communicating with everybody, isn't there a member of Fairy Tale already kind of does that? It's one of the lesser bullshit members.
Yeah.
But I feel like they passed on some, like, big war speech for Mavis or Makarov not long ago. Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember their name, but yes, there was a character in their headquarters who could do that.
Gotcha. All right, so we cut over to the battle up north, which is not nearly as good as the one in Game of Thrones at all. There's no Davos here to entertain me. And
King in the North!
I would watch that for hours. So, I haven't come close to crying at television before, but that was real close. It's like, oh, finally, things are going
you
well.
You finally did North. Something good!
The North's finally together! I mean, you already kind of won, so it's not really a big stand, but fuck it anyway! The King in the North! And this is what Ben's on me. It's like, what the fuck? I haven't watched that episode yet. I know it came out a month ago, but what the fuck? I was watching a podcast. Anyways, Lasana and Mira Jane are up there commenting on the fact that Elfman isn't there and how he got separated in that flash of light. And then the white member of Irene's group kind of covers everyone in a sticky slime as the black member uses a bunch of tape. They're fan servicey bondage stuff, but there's not a lot of it because
Mira Jane, I get you wet, I bind you up.
Yeah, yes. But thankfully Mira Jane is powerful enough that she just rips right out of it, and they had to have a little bit of a fight.
I like how she says to Lissana, you know, get with everyone, head north. And Lissana's like, but listen, you're not an important character. I'll fight them.
You suck. We cut away then to Elfman, who's walking along with Yukino, and also Hector and Frosch. Lecter, I think is his name. And he comments on the fact that, Elfman heard this in the Nuneo message. Nobody else heard it, but he's like, hey, let's keep heading that way. I'm sure Sting and Rogue and the rest of Sabretooth are with Fairy Tail members, so they're all going to be heading in that direction. And then they stop, because Yukino's like, is that you, Sarno? My older sister? In one of those weird deliveries that I can't comprehend seeing. Like, it'd be like if I hadn't seen my brother in years. And I'm like, Michael Larios? My older brother? Like, not even just, like, my brother Michael. It's just that weird, like, pause. Oh, wait, an audience is listening. My older sister! Of course.
It's one of those things that I'm sure in Japanese you just kind of went, Nesan! Because,
That makes sense.
They say that more in Japanese. But it would come off as weird in English, so she has to say her name.
Yeah. It's exactly what it is. It just comes off a little bit weird. But this is something Elfman and the cats. Well, Frosch doesn't react to it, because I don't think Frosch has facial reactions, except for I think so too. But Elfman reacts to crazy manner. But this is something we've known for a while, or at least theorized for a very long time, that this was they were sisters. Actually, I think it's been confirmed from now, because I think we've heard from her perspective.
It's been confirmed since, Yukino, first showed up.
Yeah. And he was even confirmed in story by the older sister when she showed up after they rescued Makarov, I believe.
Oh, I'm talking back during the big tournament. I think that they made reference to her being Serrano's sister.
Yeah.
Because remember, Lucena was like, oh, but I was supposed to be the short, silver-haired little sister character.
I was probably just busy drinking in a quarter because Elfman's big win over Bacchus was made completely irrelevant after fucking the perfume dickhead beat him in a squash match.
So basically,
we cut back to the fight. The two women, the two lieutenants, whatever we're calling them, are kicking Mira Jane's ass until she's like, fine, I will reveal my true power, Satan's soul. Mira Jane Allegria, or Allegria, or Allegra, like Allegra's castle. The classic.
It's Allegria.
I'm on Allegra, though.
No.
Allegra's castle.
She looks like a spider.
Fine. She reveals this form, and she comments on the fact that she ate all the demons in Tartarus, so that's why she's a whole lot stronger now. And the black member of the group calls her a monster, and Mira Jane says, I got used to being called that a long time ago, so it doesn't bother me anymore. Still, it's not a nice name to call a girl. And I'm like, you're a goddamn woman. Stop calling yourself a girl. And that line sucks, too. But she beats both of them. She crushes their spaces, or their skulls, into the ground so hard, they turn into swords. Literally.
I wish that were just, a thing you could do. Punch someone so hard, they turn into a weapon.
Yeah.
But it turns out that they are enchanted swords.
Automatons.
Yeah.
Or augmented she actually, swords, rather.
So, Scarlet. That's not
Irene.
Actually enchanted personalities into the swords and turned them into her followers. Which is pretty badass. I like that.
And it's a magic that is incomprehensible to Mira Jane. She can't imagine anyone with a magic strong enough for that. And as she's thinking that, Irene flips down behind her. And I don't know if maybe I just didn't notice this before, but does she have a leopard print staff?
Yeah.
That is the tackiest shit in the world. That is beyond tacky. That's something that I'd fucking expect to see in Mob Wives.
Honey, will you give me a leopard print staff?
Yeah, like, I just want the leopard print staff, alright? I earned it. I work hard for you. You don't know what I've been through.
Don't I get you enough gifts? Why do you need a leopard print staff? What are you going to use it for?
I know what I want, and I want it. Speak up. I can't fucking hear you.
Go get him a leopard print staff, huh?
And one of those dogs that box but doesn't do anything. Actually, 12 of them.
Whatever you want, honey.
Anyway.
Yeah, so, I like the touch in this chapter of calling it younger and older sisters. It seems inevitable initially, like it's supposed to be focused on Lasana and Mira Jane, but obviously it also then touches upon...
She's got a leopard print staff, big sis! I've got this! There, I've got a leopard print bikini now!
Yeah, now what are you gonna do? It also touches upon Yukino and her sister, so I do like that kind of duality. I think that's a nice little touch there. But it's still not honestly that eventful of a chapter. It's not like we had a lot of time to get to know these two lieutenants, so Mira Jane stomping them really doesn't have too much of an impact. Plus, that final line really does suck.
Yeah. Because these two were kind of built up as, like, you know, even though they're just followers, it seemed like they were going to be a really big deal. But then it turns out, no, not really. Mira Jane just beats them. It does seem to imply, though, that they aren't the only things that Irene has enchanted in this manner, considering that they were part of six, I think it was.
Well, I don't know. How infuriated would you be if...
The real
Spriggan 12! It's like all the Spriggan 12, except for August and I guess Brandish, because that would be really fucked up, have all been part of my fucking enchanted weapons, and the real Spriggan 12 are behind me! There's still one dude who's just his whole fucking gimmick, Sand. He's like, fucking turns up like, desert! Like, I didn't have to work hard to make his thing. It's a pretty easy personality.
That explains so much.
Alright, so that's it for Fairy Tale. Food Wars.
Shukyakinosoma, chapter 173, Unfair. So it's time for the tests in Hokkaido. Become second years. So we get this announcement that in the first portion of the exam it's a group assignment, and all the students have been divided up into groups of five, and so they have to prepare one dish between them all working together, and if they fail, all five members get expelled.
Ooh.
So that's nice. It's like, okay, that's a bit different.
It kind of makes sense, too, for the series at this point, because there are so many characters, not even including the Polaris Storm members, who are all kind of part of this now. There's just so many other, like, heroic characters, too, that it's kind of a good way to get a big group of them without having to take time away from Soma.
Mm-hmm. So, Soma's group consists of course, himself, as well as Alice, Kurikiba, Tadakoro, and Yoshino, why not?
I thought you were going to call her Bunhair Girl.
Why the fuck not? You fucking bunhead Yoshino, who never does anything except go, ah! So...
But Nick, she had so much in this chapter. Like that time, she thought how Alice would be super hot in that schoolgirl outfit, or that school teacher outfit.
such a weird moment.
Such a weird fanboy like moment. Like, I don't know why she's the one who's like, oh, she looks super hot in that outfit.
Like, okay, I guess Yoshino is at the very least bi-curious.
I was like, I feel like that'd only be a guy thing. I can't, even women who appreciate other women's looks, I feel like they wouldn't all be at all times like, oh man, I wish she were in that school teacher outfit.
They observe, oh, well, they've, you know, segregated all of the resisting people to the regime into their own groups. Which makes perfect sense, as is explained later on. Putting all the people they want to get rid of in groups together allows them to get rid of them more easily. So, Megumi is like, oh, you're here with us, and Alice is, yeah, you know. I'll, you know, use this chance to make, you know, Uncle Azami sorry for what he's done. Oh, by the way, I heard you got a Hokkaido lesson from Arina. What did you go to her for? I totally would have given you a way more useful lecture. And then, yeah, Yoshino imagines her in the school teacher outfit. She's like, oh, wow, she would look super hot.
That's such a weird line.
I actually saw on an unofficial translation of this chapter. You know how a lot of the people at Polaris call Arina Arinachi? Mm-hmm. She referred to Alice as Alice-achi, which, do you know the term Echi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what's supposed to be a joke on?
Maybe. It's just, you know, taking the ending that she applied to Arina and then applying it to Alice, but because Alice has an E at the end of her name. It's kind of like, well, this adds an entire other level to that little imagination bit you've got. You're just a pervert, Yoshino. That's what you add to this group dynamic. Imagine the other girls in fetish outfits.
Yeah, oh god, that'd be great if fucking, like, Megumi walks by. She's like, oh, she'd be super hot in, like, a sexy firewoman outfit. They'd just be like, hey, bun hair girl, fish! It's burning! She's like, oh my god, that reminds me. Alice would be totally hot as a sexy little chef. She's dressed in the chef's outfit right now! Goddamn fish burning, get it! Like Alice beating her over the head with the fire extinguisher. Get the goddamn fish!
You've got to flip it out of the burner right now! It's burned! Oh wow, she'd be totally hot as a sexy British girl.
Oh my god, Gordon Ramsay'd be super hot as a sexy little schoolgirl. Yes, I would! And perhaps we'll explore that later! But for right now, god damn it, stop being a white guy and make the goddamn fish!
Okay.
Good words, great for tangents.
So Soma looks around the room. And he's like, oh, well, Takumi and the other Polaris folks are all in a different room, as are Mito and Arato, but Megumi thinks that they must all be grouped together. Meanwhile, they look over to a different part of the room, and they see that Arina is with regular students, who are all going like, ah, Miss Arina, you look totally hot in a schoolgirl outfit.
I'm like, what is wrong with this school? I thought you were supposed to be cooking nerds. Why are you all weird fetish nerds?
So, but it makes sense, of course, because, you know, Azami wants Arina to be part of his regime, even though, and he doesn't know if she's part of the resistance yet. He is utterly convinced that she's going to return to his side still. So to have her be set up, you know, all good to go to be fast-tracked to her second year makes perfect sense. A new professor, I believe, Hiroi, introduced herself and says, you know, this is, you know, you've got to make a salmon dish, and if you can make a salmon dish delicious enough to get my approval, then you pass. And Yukino's like, this is awesome! Arina would look totally hot dressed as a sexy salmon!
Just see, like, some enormous fish just clock her from the side.
And, so she says, oh yeah, but we've got Yokurakiba here, and you know, he's awesome at making seafood. He even beat one of Central's lackeys. Megumi's a seafood expert. We're totally good to go. We can pass this thing. But Professor Heroi then says, "Well, you know, I'm sure you've all taken Dina Zombie's personal pre-exam review course. If you'd simply recreate the dish you practiced for that course, you'll easily pass the assignment. So don't worry. Relax and do as we taught you." And Alice is like, "Eh, I'm not even pretending to be fair." And Yukino's like, "Ah, you wouldn't look sexy in a schoolgirl outfit. I hate you, Professor Roy."
Just like a collection of the classmates just throw her into an oven. Like, that's enough of that.
But she says, "We'll still pass." And Megumi's like, "Yeah, all we have to do is make a delicious dish using salmon. We'll be fine." But Soma and Alice are like, "Yeah, but why does that have to be salmon? That's kind of suspicious." As they point out that salmon is out of season now because it's the winter, and the season for salmon is fall. So they don't have as many salmon that they can catch. The quality of the fish is lower. So it seems strange to them. But then they see all the sand being wheeled out in these ice buckets, and they're like, "Oh, wow, it's really top-quality salmon. This is great. You know, this is the influence of Totsuki that they can have so many high-quality salmon at this time of year." And then Soma's group gets their salmon in the bucket, and it's just like... bomb-quality fish. And they're like, "What the hell is this?" And Yukino's like, "Oh, no, wait, our fish are... Okay, get ready to start! Doo-doo-doo! You're not worth listening to." And she says, "All right, it's about noon right now, and your time limit is sunset today, so get cooking." Someone's thinking to himself, "I'll bet the same thing is happening to all the other groups of resistors in all the other rooms as well." And we do get a brief flash of Hisako and the Polaris students and Akumi and Takumi all looking not so good because of the shit they're having to deal with. And I feel really bad for Hisako because she's stuck with the jocks again.
Just like, "Bro, this chick looks super hot!
She looked totally great in the schoolgirl outfit!
Oh my god, bro! I was like just thinking that!
Oh,
high five! You guys were cooking. What did you just high five with? You don't want to know! Or do you?"
We can tell it, she...
Yeah, she's like, "I'm just going to cook over here, and you guys..."
Excuse
just...
"Excuse me, can these guys be expelled anyway?"
Yeah, she's like, "You know what, this school's not worth it. I just will all forfeit. I'll just... I'll be a nun."
"Oh, you totally look good in a sexy nun outfit."
Oh my god. "We're going to follow you where you go! Just to comment on things."
Heroi actually snickers and says to Soma's group, "Well, if you don't like the salmon we got you, feel free to try and catch your own salmon. But, oh, you know, you can even go to the river yourself. But, you know, salmon season's almost over. How are you ever going to get any better quality salmon than the ones we gave you? At this point, it's impossible for you to acquire fish that will meet the standards of this exam. Absolutely impossible!" She's like so blatant in her "I've screwed you over."
It's weird because usually these sorts of characters, I guess it's like a zombie's evil administration as like one thing, like, "Hey, if you're part of us, go cog wild because no one can stop you," because usually they're more restrained about this. Like, usually it's like, "Oh, the tables are turned against you, but I shall keep that part quiet to just myself and wait for you to discover that." And rather at the start, she's like, "You're fucked! You're fucked! You're fucked! You're fucked! You're fucked! I'm going to laugh at you in the dance of the circle, pointing the entire time."
"I'm going to get very tired if I'm here the next 8 hours, but I'm going to do it anyway.
It's worth it.
You there, put me in a spinny wheelie chair so I can be spun around them while pointing and laughing. Also, I'm going to need an oxygen tank because laughing for that long is going to be very hard.
Yeah, get me some salmon. All we have is these Celts. Yeah, those are pretty good. Give me one of those."
"Yeah, whatever. My taste buds have been destroyed."
"Smoking so much."
So Yoshida starts to panic, and Soma says, "Well, let's whip up these fish for you know, some dinner. Don't want to let them go to waste." And Yoshida's like, "Boy, isn't there something we could do? I mean, you've taken cheap ingredients and made them into awesome dishes before. Can't you, you know, turn these into delicious food?" And someone admits, "Nah, it'd be way too hard in order to pull the up this time. See, right after spawning is the point of the year when salmon have the least oil and fat. And Kurikiba chimes in, yeah, even the pickling technique that Yukihira used during the Fall Classic, not even that would work. It takes days to do. We are not going to be able to get that done in time. So, Yoshino continues to panic. Some of the other students start to laugh at them. They're like, that's what they get for trying to disobey Dinazami. Obeying Surazami is the correct choice. Anyone who goes against Central doesn't deserve to stay a Totsuki.
Bonsai! Azami! Bonsai! Azami! And they all turn into giant pumpkin men.
So, apparently, if you're not a main character, you're just a zombie now for Central. But that does, I guess, fit in with the theme of what's been going on, like what that one teacher described everyone's food tasting as when he tested them out. And Yoshino continues to panic. That's what she's there for in this chapter, is to be panicked.
Yeah, she's meant to be the one person on her team that has no confidence.
Game over, man!
Yeah.
Game over!
The one who creates the threat, because everyone else on the team's like, well, I guess Megumi's not always going to be that confident, but at least in this case, she can have the respect. She can keep a little self-respect and not be the one like, oh, we're fucked, man! Let's start offering the teacher blowjob and sexual favors to get out of this!
Megumi's a little bit too reserved and has grown too much for her to be appropriate for this role at this point. So
we'll just put the shittier version of Megumi in the role.
Right. Hiroi approaches Erina and she says, there's no need to fret, Miss Erina. Those children have no place and will fail, as they must. I am sure your honored father will be most pleased. After all, with this, all of the bad influence around you will be expunged. Where did my teeth go?
Oh, I'm like one of those creepy clowns you shoot water into at the carnival.
It's a really disturbing panel, honestly. Just the way her mouth is drawn. Ugh. Yoshio, like,
no, I.
But Erina says to the professor, oh, no, I've got no reason. What do you mean I've got no reason to fret? I don't even know what you're talking about, because there isn't a single thing in this room I need to concern myself with. And Hiroi's kind of like, what you talking about? I just told you that. Soma gets everyone's attention. He says, what was that thing that Nakiri mentioned in the study session? I think it was called... And he just cuts off and he starts talking to Alice and Kurikiba. And they already know what he's talking about. So he doesn't actually explain what his plan is. And meanwhile, Yoshino's like, what's going on? And he was like, Soma, what's going on? All right, if you think this is all it takes to get us expelled, you got another thing coming. Sit back and watch, everyone. The group that will present the most delicious salmon dish in this room will be ours. Yoshino's still like, what's going on?
What's happening? It's someone in a sexy school outfit.
Alice is doing a real sexy pose there. Great. Now yeah. I feel confident.
I like this panel because I think it's kind of cool to see like these characters in like a big hero kind of moment, like the confidence in it. It's like, you know, it's a cool looking trio of the group. I do have to wonder, I'm like, Alice is far too curvy for a 15-year-old. That is absurd. There are fucking supermodels that would kill to look like that. Mm. Also, just kind of a weird pose for that moment. It's like she's like, I'm going to be confident to do that all the cleavage.
She's not even, like, crossing her arms normally. She's crossing them in a way that models cross their arms, yeah, you like know?
But still.
She's lifting her shoulders up really high in order to do it, too. It's such an awkward little scene because Soma's looking all confident. Kurikiba doesn't have his headband on, so he looks calm and stoic. And Alice is there looking directly through the panel like,
yeah. She's like, I bet you think I'd look good in the sexy school girl outfit. And I'm like, I do, but that's why I go on the internet and look at porn.
But overall, I did like the chapter. Mm-hmm. It was a nice little establishing thing. Nice to see just how goddamn blatantly cheap this exam session is going to be. Nice to see, I'm looking forward to seeing exactly what they're going to do to overcome it, so.
Yeah, I think I'm really excited to see this group in particular. I think Alice is one of my favorite characters in the series. It's always good to see more Kurokiba. This is a good group of characters to focus around.
Well, and also, Soma makes mention of something that Erina was trying to teach them about. So, it seems like her lessons are actually going to pay off. So.
What confused me, because she says Nikiri taught us something, and then refers to Alice
and goes,
Nikiri.
Nikiri.
And I'm like, which one?
I do actually hope they make it more of a deal of that as, you know, Alice and Erina's role in the Resistance, you know, continues on. Like, Soma just calls them both Nikiri with no distinction between them. But that's that.
Yes.
My Hero Academia, number 97. Tell it like it is, Mom.
You go, girl.
You go, girlfriend. You tell All Might you're going to protect your boy.
And no one go do it to my boy.
Last time, Midoriya's mother. She has a name. Like, I looked it up in the last chapter so I could name her. But she, in the
character's jump description,
it just says Midoriya's mother. But Midoriya Mama, last time refused to allow Deku to continue attending UA because of her concern for his safety. And she continues the whole story at the beginning of this chapter, saying this doesn't have anything to do with how great a hero you are. It's about classes that keep getting attacked by villains and students who suffer injuries that the school can't prevent. I don't want my son going to a school like that anymore. I just don't. So, after a bit of silence, All Might starts to say something, but Deku instead chimes in and says, look, no, me getting hurt, that was all my own doing. The teachers kept warning me, but I just jumped into action anyway. And she says, but if these are the results, then it's still the school's responsibility. And Toshinori says, look, you know, sit down, kid. He's trying to calm him down as his mom continues talking. And she says, you can call me a helicopter parent if you want. I'm fine with that. I don't want to ruin Izuku's dreams. And if he's intent on becoming a hero, then, you know, there are other hero courses at schools other than UA, right? But this isn't any comfort to Deku at all. And Toshinori remembers him wanting to go to UA because All Might had gone there. And so it's really important to him that he specifically goes to this academy. And Toshinori is really upset about this too, but Deku runs off towards his room, and Toshinori is like, I know that this has special meaning for you because, you know, you've looked up to me, you've been walking my shadow this whole time. And, of course, the one stopping you is your mom. So that's,
yeah, what can I do? Yeah.
But Deku reappears from his room almost instantly and says, fine. I don't have to go to UA. Look, I've got this letter. This is a letter from a kid I rescued during our training camp.
It starts, sorry I punched you in the junk. As all good letters do.
Exactly.
I remember that one to King Henry they sent off, or King George, where it was like, we the people, sorry for punching you in the junk, but we declare independence. Totes, signed, lovingly, America.
Yeah, it's Kota's letter that he wrote, of course, to thank Deku for saving his life. And he says, you know I'm still a pain, making you worry all the time, but even if it was just for a second, this kid's letter made me feel like a real hero. I was so happy. So it doesn't have to be UA, I'll go forever. I'm gonna be a hero. And Toshinori thinks, he goes, oh my god, this is, you know, he's not just walking in my shadow. And suddenly he enters his muscle form, and he stands up and then gets down on the ground in front of Deku and his mother and says, sorry for getting ahead of myself. And he goes full Dogeza, pressing his head into the ground. And he says, I believe Izuku is suitable to be my successor. In other words, I want to make him the next symbol of peace. And as the former symbol of peace, I have to apologize. I took his admiration for granted and was lax in his education. For that, I'm sorry. And he can't hold the muscle form anymore. It immediately poofs out after he says that. And he says, I beg you, you know, the path I walked was a bloody one. That's exactly what I don't want for your son. So I will stand by him and help him find his own path. It's completely reasonable to have doubts about UA because of the state it's in, but the heroes of UA know that. They know that things have got to change. Please don't focus on the current UA, but on the UA going forward. Please allow me to devote myself to mentoring Izuku. It's a really cool moment.
No, it's exceptionally well done. I like that the Deku's mom's reaction is essentially like she's so flabbergasted she like falls to her knees. Like she just can't. Like it takes a moment to kind of stabilize herself, and then she's, you know, kind of on her knees talking to him as he's still kind of doing the bow.
Mm-hmm. And Toshinori vows at the end of all this, I will protect him and raise him right, even if it costs me my life. And after she recovers from shock, Deku's mom says, I can't agree to that, because Izuku lives for you. It's not that I have something against UA. All I want is for Izuku to find happiness in life, so don't sacrifice your life. Live, and please look after him. And if you can promise me that, then I'll give me my consent. Yeah. So. Yeah.
I like that. I like it a lot. We have been kind of leading more and more towards the thing that All Might's role in the story from here on forward is solely to be a mentor for Deku now. You know, he's not the number one hero. He doesn't have to be, you know, necessarily an instructor at UA the same way. His focus from here on in is to, you know, lead Deku forward. But I really like the moment that his mom kind of says, like, I'm not agreeing to it if you're going to die for its sake, you know. I'll agree, but you have to promise that you don't die either, because he needs you. He looks up to you. Like, I like that sentiment, too.
It's, I just like how he couldn't hold the muscle for him to do light exercise for even an instant, but he holds out for almost the entirety of this big speech that he gives just so that he can appear as All Might in front of her while making this statement. He can't make it all the way through because he can't hold the form, but it's just such a cool moment where he looms up all muscular and then bows in front of her.
And the best part is, like, he doesn't even break his beat when he goes back. He just continues to stay bowed and continue this, you know, very passionate speech.
So we get a little bit of internal monologue as both Toshinori and Deku thank her for her decision. Or she thinks, you know, I don't like this, but Izuku somehow managed to get all the support from the hero he looks up to, and I'm sure that this is making him happy. So, of course, she's never going to be completely fine with Deku going out to do heroics and being in danger, but she's been convinced, at least for now, to let him do it.
What's interesting is this internal monologue to herself seems to be spoken to Deku's father, who we've not heard much about. I was under the impression he was alive, but this seems to be not the case, at least from this kind of... She definitely seems to almost be speaking to somebody who's no longer with us, in a way, when she's like...
I think we've seen his picture on the wall at some point.
I might be wrong. I thought he was still alive, but this little speech here seems to be spoken of somebody who's no longer there. You know, when she's saying, like, I'm sure this is making you truly happy. Like, if he was just a business guy away on a trip, I'm sure she'd be like, you know, she'd speak more in the present, or like, you know, this will make you happy, the future tense, or something like that.
I don't know.
Well, she's saying Arazuku, so she's definitely talking about somebody else. She's not talking about, like, to Deku, about Deku. And it would imply that she's talking about the
father. She says our Izuku.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, All Might and Deku prepare to set off. Toshinori says, you got a good mom, kid. She actually reminds me of my master, my predecessor. And Deku's like, huh? She does? Oh yeah, her hairstyle.
I like that too, though. It's a nice little touch.
But he's actually, of course, remembering something that Nana had told him, which was, you know, to live. You know, live as a hero. Don't just be a martyr. Live to be the symbol of peace and stuff. And then he also lifts his arm up. And also, she's really strong. So he sets off. Then the chapter closes with this big two-page spread of all of the different students of Class A setting off to begin their new journey at UA. I love all the little details in so many of the panels. We've got, I'm sorry. You know, because you can tell, like, Kirishima is late. We've got, I forgot, what's his name? The talks to animals guy?
Coda.
Yeah, he's, like, observing his partner from the exams from afar. We've got Mineta looking at a girl's and a woman's ass as he goes by. And then there's Ida's already in the class.
But yeah, quietly alone, perfectly straight.
Everyone else is just making their way to school. He's already in the classroom sitting at his desk ready to go.
I thought it was actually... I didn't notice the code touch she just brought up there, but I was like, oh, it's kind of cute. Like, he now has a crush on her, too, maybe. Nice little touch from it.
Oh, gosh, I've forgotten... I don't remember Invisible Girl's name. It looks like she's greeting
Shoji, I think.
Shoji as well. Because he's looking over his shoulder while...
Yeah.
It looks like she's waving because her sleeve is lifted up. But yeah, cool. Just some cool details here and there that I really like. Oh, and Kaminari Kid? Kaminari and that one... idiot with the tape for coming out of his wrist are talking to each other as they walk along too.
Yeah,
I just like the you know, there's a panel for every single student, but you can see some of them in the other
interacting.
Like, Suyu's behind Mineta.
Yeah, you this can see cool. All of them like walking along, doing all their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool stuff. Here.
But yeah, that's it. That's the chapter. A good chapter, again, for My Hero Academia. Not as powerful as the last one, I felt, but this is something that kind of had to happen. She kind of had to go along with this. Yeah, that's it.
It's a good chapter.
All right, so let's move on to One Piece. Because I don't really have much to say about Nisekoi. It's a big dramatic speech that Marika gives to GTK, but
Do you think Nisekoi's like, Kubo, you motherfucker. You're like fucking, we're Frasier, and you're motherfucking friends that just had to end at the exact same time, so no one's gonna give a shit about us. That was like one of my favorite sketches from SNL during its worst years. Was just the one where the Frasier cast is like sitting around. They keep taking stuff out of their room for the friends' like closure party. They're like, "We're trying to end the show here." Like, sorry, we need this for the friends' after party.
One Piece, chapter 831: Adventure in the Mysterious Forest. So, everyone has arrived on the coast of Whole Cake Island. Did they even say who they saw on the coast?
Yeah, they seem to imply it's Sanji, because they
right.
make mention
But then they
of the
seem
fact.
To imply it wasn't actually Sanji.
Well, they think it's Sanji.
Right.
They just don't know what's happening because he left. Like, they're like, where'd he go? Like, what's up with that? And I think they mentioned they also thought they saw pudding, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very strange... I guess it's meant to be part of it, I don't know.
So one of the mini ships from the Thousand Sunny pops out. It's a shark submarine! I love that. A submarine shaped like a shark. And of course there's this giant fucking viewing screen in the mouth. Like you want to have in a submarine.
Duh, obviously.
they're basically heading out for a bit of an infiltration. Brooke and Pedro going in the sub, separating from everyone else. And so Pedro's like, "All right, you know, I'm sorry, you know, that I'm gonna be with you on this infiltration mission. Bruce's like, oh no, it's all right. Infiltration is actually my forte. And his spear just pops out to demonstrate, and Carrot's freaking out. What happened?
I keep forgetting Brooke can do that at times.
So, they set off separating from the group, and Petra says, like, you know, you guys be careful now. Remember Peckham's warning to us as they set off. So Luffy and the rest arrive on the coast, and Luffy is shouting out for Sanji and Pudding, we're here! Hello! Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sure that they were here, right?
Yeah, we're around the corner, right? There's Sanji!
Meanwhile, Nami and Chopper are like, ooh, there's the ground's made of cream! Yum! Luffy heads up to the perch where he saw Sanji and Pudding before, but then he looks off and he sees Sanji in the woods, and so everyone rushes off to try and find him, but he's gone by the time that they reach the edge of the forest where they saw him at. And they're looking around and it's like, oh wow, it's Willy Wonka's factory! Because it's a forest made of fucking candy. And everyone, of course...
The schnozberries taste like schnozberries! Well, the schnozberries taste like poop!
Who ever heard of a schnozberry?
Aw, Nick, I feel like we need to do a radio play Willy Wonka, and you'll be fucking Veruca Blunt or whatever.
Veruca Salt.
Veruca Salt.
What kind of business
and is that? And I'll just be the fat German kid, like, oh, but I can't help but eat all the chocolate!
Oh, okay.
You fat motherfucker, you couldn't even get through the lobby!
You could say that we all have a little bit of Augustus inside us right now. In fact, you could say that we just ate him.
It's a great citizen. It's a great
citizen. Detention. So, Nami is like, "What? Why the hell would Sanji be trying to avoid us? Is he guilty?" And Luffy's like, okay, let's all split up and search for him. I'll go this way in the direction of the cake. And Chopper's like, and I'll go ahead where the caramel is coming from. They're just freaking out over the candy. So, pardon me. Nami basically says, look, I'm going to stick with you, because I don't trust where the fuck your intentions on going off in this direction. But, that seems to leave Chopper with Carrot if they're planning on splitting up, which they fortunately don't do, because I don't think you can trust Chopper and Carrot on their own.
Yeah.
And Chopper just is constantly going, the flowers are candy, it's so sweet! The Green River's made of melon juice! And the bridge's made of donuts! And I'm just like, will you guys focus? But as they're crossing over this bridge, a giant alligator? Crocodile? It doesn't really look like either to me. rears up out of the ground, Jaws style, to try and eat them, and it collapses the bridge by biting into it. Chopper, rushes off in his deer form. Carrot manages to dash away, and Luffy snatches Nami in a most indignant manner to just carry her off under his arm.
Well, the thing I like about this is we get to see Carrot in action again. We've seen it before when trouble strikes, she gets into an action pose. I don't know why. I guess like I like her martial arts bent of like the very speedy one. So I like how she bounces away like in a, like an already in a pose, and then when she lands, it already kind of seems like she's ready to strike back. Mm-hmm. Looks cool to me.
So
Crocodile's like,
oh, it is just humans. He just walks off on his hind legs. He's wearing a bowler hat and suspenders.
Nick, I've never in my life felt more connection to a character in One Piece than I do this bowler-wearing crocodile who just wants to eat donut bridges.
Bowler croc for straw hat.
Yeah. No, fuck you. Luffy for bowler croc pirate.
Oh, boy. Oh, I'm starting to get dizzy from laughing so much.
Well, and this line that's coming up is just great, too, where Nami's just like, it's a talking crocodile with the clothes and a hat! And Luffy just points to the chopper, and Garrett's like, look, if this is bothering you at this point, I don't know what to tell you. She's like, alright, yeah, I get it. Just seems weird at the moment.
At that point, this really freaks you out. Nami's like, oh, look, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's like, she's like, it's people like those! I didn't mean people like that. No, I didn't. It just seemed weird at the time. I have a lot of animal people friends, I'm telling you.
We almost got eaten by it. Like, you can forgive me for freaking out over this. But
I just like them commenting on the fact that at this point it's really hard to make things that are that crazy in one piece. Like a crocodile with a hat. Like, it's the seventh fucking talking animal we've seen this week.
At that moment, they suddenly notice there's a second Luffy observing them. And they're like, huh? And both Luffy's are like, who are you? But the second Luffy is a mirrored image of Luffy. His scar is on the other side of his face. They butt heads, and both Luffy and his double are completely mirroring each other. What do you mean, who am I? I'm Luffy! Stop copying me! So, rather than being, like, clones, they're like reflections in a mirror. Which they find to be really unusual. And then they look over at Sanji, and they're like, Sanji, we've come to get you! Where's Pudding? There's no way that you could possibly be a reflection like Luffy's reflection! Well, I guess it's Luffy making who is shouting out to Sanji, and he is an idiot, so it makes sense.
I don't know why, I only just noticed this. Sanji, that they're seeing, has a lollipop. I guarantee it's not a dub reference, it's just the fact that they're in a forest, I'm sure, of candy, but like seeing it does make me think of that fucking dub.
Yeah. I'm Sanji from Brooklyn.
Yeah, what's going on? Luffy, you're over here? Oh no, it's much more nasally. Oh, Luffy, you... Oh, God, that's so hard to
Luffy,
do it.
Luffy, yep.
I'm trying to... What,
Luffy,
what?
You're over here. I don't even remember Sanji all that well, honestly.
It wasn't... I remember not minding the voice, actually. It's just so much easier to do the fucking Joey from Yu-Gi-Oh!
It really is.
I think, yeah! Moss head!
Well, that's just a bridge series Joey, though.
That's the only Joey I know anymore.
You know what else is really easy to do? Is Usopp. Oh, they just talk like this all the time!
Oh, a talking crocodile with a bowler hat!
I've got no dignity whatsoever! But the mirror Luffy is still completely mirroring every single thing that Luffy does, even mirrors his Gum Gum Gatling when he gets really pissed off. So he's not really progressive past it. So instead, Carrot and Chopper and Nami just go past them while he fights his own clone. Good luck with that, bro.
Eventually it'll figure it out.
But Carrot and Chopper and Nami all freak out when they see this giant, a huge person stuck in the ground. They're half buried up to their shoulders. And they're like, oh my god, you're buried! And he says, I'm buried here because, like, I want to be.
And the Chopper's angry at this, like, fine, fuck you! And the dude's like, I want juice. I don't care what you want! I love how it took nothing to set Chopper off! This dude was just like, kind of like annoying in one moment, like, I'm buried here because I want to be. And Chopper's like, fine, fuck you! And the dude's like, I want juice. Fuck you! I don't care what you want!
It's like, I was worried about you, so fuck you off now! And Nami has to hold him back.
He's about to go nuts on this dude.
Oh, God. And he's like, there's an apple juice fall just over there. I like it. Nope, ignoring you. Searching for Sanji. Can I get some apple juice? If you give me some apple juice, I might just tell you where to go. No! Ignoring you! Fuck you! And at that moment, they are attacked by some sort of mounted rider on, like, an ostrich, it looks like. And it's some sort of a rabbit person in a fancy hat that we only see, like, their face in shadows. They... Instead, chops through a couple of trees with faces akin to the ones that we saw with Big Mom. And they're in this living forest where everything is all weird. Even Nami's compass is freaking out. So they don't know where they are. They see, you know, everything has a face and is chanting, and Chopper's like, what about Sanji? We can't leave Sanji behind. And now he says, we don't even know if he was the real Sanji. Everything's weird in this forest, and then they realize that the forest is kind of closing in around them, and they're all chanting, crowd closer around them, block the exit, let's play with them. We'll play with them to death. Also, the plants are singing.
Tree, tree,
flower, flower.
Yeah.
Also, it sort of looks like Brooke is dead in this one panel, because we see a corpse that's missing a tooth like Brooke is.
Yeah, you see a skull there. Yeah, they note it's the Whole Cake Island, southwest coast, the Seducing Woods.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty interesting kind of cool thing. It's kind of clear now that we're in Alice in Wonderland territory, mm-hmm. with the exception that it's a lot less subtle than Alice in Wonderland. Like, shit's just outright evil here. But it's kind of cool. I like the notion of, like, the trees themselves literally picking themselves up and moving to try to, like, you know, cover up the exit and create this, like, maze-like structure within themselves. And, you know, there's the potential that someone here maybe has a mirror devil fruit or something like that. Possibility there. Another talking animal seems like they're on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be related to the whole trip Peckham's took here before. Not Peckham's, Pedro did here before. So it might be related to that. And he might also be our white rabbit analog for this Alice in Wonderland adventure. So I think it's kind of cool to see where this is going to go. But One Piece is sadly off next week as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bummer.
Yep. Toriko. Gourmet 377, The King's Fight. So we open up with a Geisha being like, I'm going to go get God. Fuck all these kings. We're going to go get God. But suddenly Bambina appears in front of him. He's going. So Acacia's like, fuck you! Punches him in the face.
Punches him so hard, it launches his eyeball out of his head. It explodes it out of his fucking head. He loses that eyeball.
He looks down after he punches him and sees that Bambino's tail is wrapped around his arm, and Bambino releases his muscle form, flies back into Acacia, and punches him over towards the Whale King, and he's like, and the Blue Nitro are like, oh shit, the Whale King's going to suck him in and kill him. If you can't surpass the speed of light, there is no escaping it.
Fucking.
It's like a black hole.
Toriko logic is absurd sometimes. The notion of, like, anything that doesn't move light speed can't get out of this.
So,
like, have we known anything that moves faster than light speed except for Coco's arrows?
So, he calls out to Acacia and is like, you've got to enter the back channel in order to escape. And Acacia's like, what do you mean avoid it? I'm a god! I don't avoid anything! And his arms get really big as he goes, it's just some stupid whale!
I do like that. Dude, fuck this whale!
And his arms grow utterly massive, like eclipsing the rest of his body, and then he does this double-handed smash into the meteor that's surrounding the Whale King's body. And it completely crumples around the whale and shatters it. And they're like, he just split open the giant meteorite that was covering the Whale King's body, the one that's presumably been there for millennia. So that's pretty badass. In, I guess, stunning the Whale King, he's prevented it from sucking everything in as it kind of sinks down to the water. And then he's like, okay, now I'm gonna go get God. What's going on? As the sky deer has appeared, and the Blue Nitro are like, oh my god, he's put him in the back channel! And Acacia's body is all shriveled up, and he's like, oh no, this is the opposite from usual. I've entered a world where time flows faster. 1 second on the outside is like 100 years in here, maybe even 1,000. So, So he's like, okay, I'm just going to activate a powerful back channel around my spell to balance all of this. But then suddenly poison drips onto him. And he looks up and sees that there's a devil python looming over him, dripping poison onto him. He's like, what are you doing here? Never mind, I'm just going to leave.
You don't talk.
Fuck you. I hate you.
You're so not dead to that whale.
Are you God? No? Fuck you. I'm leaving now. And he's being surrounded by other primitive creatures that are appearing from within the forest in the Deer King's horns to fuck him over. A whole ton of them are just surrounding him. And Acacia's getting pissed off by all of this. But he observes that he's kind of screwed over because of the domain that he's in, he can't access all of Neo's powers. So he has to just defeat all of the Earth's strongest creatures and defeat them without Neo's powers on his own in order to get out of there. But he's like, fine. You guys are just going to be my appetizers. I'll kill all of you and eat you. Meanwhile, more fights are going on. Sepe is fighting one of the Blue Nitro. He's like, I thought Joey had you under your control. And Toriko's like, wait, yeah. And he says, I guess I have to explain. Yeah, I took the risk of attacking Komatsu because I was relying on you guys to find his regenerated heart. But having seen God now, I know that I wasn't wrong.
Okay.
Toriko's like, okay, but why did you... What? Oh, wait. So Komatsu is okay in there and he's preparing God... Presumably, because he doesn't actually ask that question. He just goes, you mean Komatsu is? And that's it. Anyhow, the Blue Nitro is still trying to cut off Toriko from God. So Tepe surrounds himself in vines while he says, I'll buy you some time, so go and get God. You must eat the main dish, Toriko. While he's privately thinking to himself, this is as far as my life goes.
Good. Fuck you.
Oh, Tepe, that well-thought-out character. Where would we be without Tepe in this series?
I don't know. One less character towards the end, I guess.
Yeah, really. That's the end of the chapter. It's kind of all over the place, honestly. Starts off promising enough with the Acacia just being like, fuck all of these people trying to fight them.
I wish that was just the chapter of Acacia becoming increasingly frustrated with how these fucking eight kings continue to attack him. Like, fuck this monkey king! Fuck this whale king! Fuck this deer king!
But, yeah, it really kind of takes a turn where it goes to Tepe and just like, okay, fine. I guess we're gonna fight with him. Why not?
Sure.
I guess these two Blue Nitro, whose names I can't remember ever. Alright. Let's cap things off with World Trigger. So, the decision of whether or not Husei can join Tamakomatsu comes down to Commander Kido.
The big cliffhanger last week, Nick. What's your decision, Commander Kido? Dun-dun.
We get a moment of tension at the start, where everyone's waiting for his answer. Chapter 149, Shika Amatori, Part 6. What? But I thought that this was about Husei and Omasu and Kido. What's this got to do with Shika? Huh. But Kido says...
Okay.
Yeah.
You can join. Lame cliffhanger. Can you imagine? I hope there is no anime anymore, but if there were an anime, it ends with that moment at the end of an episode, and the next episode is somehow 15 minutes of padding until that moment of, okay. But there's a condition.
Yeah, he says, however, I have one condition. Forming the perfect group for the away team is something we've both considered. Just like you planned out the deals of adding Husei to your squad, I've thought about this too. Let me get straight to the point. I want to bring Agent Amatori on the expedition. They're like, what do you mean? And Kinuta chimes in by saying, well, this expedition is going to be a lot bigger than the previous ones, and it's going to take a lot of Tryon consumption for it. So if we have someone with a ton of Tryon with us, that would be really convenient. So, when we're flying the expedition ship, if we run out of Trion too soon, we could supply new Trion directly from the crew members into the ship. But it's not sufficient for the expected amount of Trion that we need. So if we have a huge Trion user like Amatori, we could drastically reduce the number of ports we need to stop at. We could make the trip a lot more easily. We could increase the size of the ship. We could increase the number of crew members that could come along. So if we have a bigger ship, that'd be pretty cool. So
it's actually a very logical request on their part, because it does actually make a lot of sense of, hey, she could use the power of the engines, plus we could have a bigger ship, we'd have crew members, this is a rescue mission, so having more room available on the ship that she could help power is actually a huge benefit.
So, Osamu says, so you mean even if Tamakoma 2 doesn't get selected for the UA team, you'll still bring Chika along? Nikita's like, yeah.
But she's not going to be in combat, so their whole kind of thing is just, like,
she would just be, you know, an assist.
Yeah, and that way Osamu's like, okay, so even if she does go, because we can't, she still wouldn't be able to look for Rinji or any of the others that, while they're there.
And there is it's a weird little bit. I'm going to try and figure out, hang on a second, what is this actually called? Because I just want to say far-fetched.
Yeah, you're like, she looks like a fucking far-fetched.
Hang on a sec, okay.
What is a
duck comes bearing green onions. It means something surprising but convenient. So, it's a Japanese expression that is, which is where far-fetched comes from, which is a duck that holds a green onion, a leek.
I guess they serve ducks with a lot of green onions, then?
No, a duck comes bearing green onions. It means, but I guess that would something be surprising but convenient.
But I guess that would be the joke, that you'd eat a duck brought its own seasoning, essentially.
Right, right. So, Kinota is like, I don't like this idea. You know, if we take Amatori to Afta Krator, we'd be delivering her on a silver platter, which is described as a duck with Chica's head carrying a leek under it, along with it. It's such a weird little, and she's making the duck face.
It's the one time the duck face. It's the one time the duck face has never been more appropriate.
It's great. Bakio says, "Look, we've thought about that, but the benefits outweigh the risks." Is the conclusion we've drawn, and so she's not going to be a combatant. She'd be stationed inside the ship. She'd basically be an engineer. And Osamu is thinking about this, and he's like, "Well, if she does go alone, then she's not going to be able to look for Rinji." And Chika says, "I'm okay with it." And they're like, "Are you sure?" And she says, "Well, yeah. I mean, if they don't accept, they're not going to let Husei join, and we want to join the away team anyways. There's nothing to lose." So they're like, "Okay, so you accept?" And Chika says, "Well, yeah, but we're gonna become an A-rank squad before then and join the expedition anyway."
It's cool, not far.
Yeah, just really confident in their abilities now. And I like the expressions that her team shoots her, because Yuma's just like, "Yeah, you tell." And Husei's like, "Okay.
I don't like you."
And Osamu's like, "Ugh, she's confident." But it does seem like a big step for her, because she's always been like, "I want to help," you know, but she and has her deal of hang-ups and her shyness. So
I like the confidence in there isn't like a swelled-up shonen confidence, like, "We're going to prove to you that you're wrong, and we're going to join the A-Ray team." It's just like an almost matter-of-fact kind of thing, where it's like, "But I want to point out that we're definitely going to be A-ranked by then." Like, that's a kind of confidence that's cool to see.
So, Kido then says, "Well, now I can move on to the next topic. Because I gotta tell you, the selection for the away team, you're not gonna have any chance of being promoted to A-rank before then." Like, "What do you mean?" "Well, the next expedition is gonna be a big one. We want training for the away team to last much longer than ever before. And so we decided to set the schedule for the selection to start earlier than usual. Thus, even if you fulfilled the requirement to challenge an A-rank squad, there would be enough time for your promotion test." So you're saying that we can't actually
go.
We just lose Chika. We just lost Chika because we promised that before you told us that. Because like, "Oh, hang on.
I'm not a dickhead. I just look like one."
"Since you have officially decided that she is going to come with us no matter what, that means that we can automatically determine we're going to increase the capacity of the crew, which means after the qualified A-rank squads have been selected, there's still going to be some room left. Soma says, so you're picking B-rank agents too? He says, yes. We're going to get a few squads from B-rank, maybe a few individuals from some of the other squads as well. And we get this brief little image of good guys who are B-rank.
It's, yeah, this is, well, Ninomi is not a good guy, but this is...
I meant in terms of talent.
Oh, okay. I don't know if Ozma would be up there either. Anyway, this is interesting. On one level, it's a little bit disappointing, because we kind of been going through the rank wars for so long under that impression, and suddenly it's like, it doesn't mean as much because all the A ranks are staying the same, couple B ranks we get in. But it does go to explain why we've spent a lot of time getting to know so many of these B rank characters when the impression is some of them may be joining it as kind of like mercenaries or they're, you know, aces essentially. Right. So Ko, Kagura, characters like that. Ozma probably actually will. I don't know how many. They say a few select individuals, so it can't be that many, because there's still, presumably, a shit ton of A-rank squads going on this mission, too.
Right.
So, I'm not exactly sure, but...
We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. Kido says, look, I didn't bring this up earlier, because then it wouldn't be fair to have brought up before she agreed to our conditions. And he was like, no, that makes sense, because then he would have... It sounded like you saying, give me Chica if you want to join the expedition. Instead of, you know, blackmailing them completely with this, then he made the decision up to them, and then was like, okay, but now you do have a chance to go. But, yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. Kido says, alright, you've got 3 B-rank war matches until the selection, and you're going to have to be in the top 2 of B-rank within those 3 matches. So, it might be a bit of a challenge, but, you know, we allow the neighbor on your squad, so I've set the standard for how high you gotta rank. Also, he's gotta go through standard procedure to be enlisted. He can't just, you know, jump in. He's gotta actually be a B-rank agent in order to join your squad. So, everyone's kinda like, okay, well, I guess that settles that then. So, I guess the deadline for the next induction is kind of too fast for him to actually get everything settled for Husei, but we could just kind of slide him in for this, right? He was like, yeah, fine. Alright, get out of here. Go. So, a very calm meeting.
Yeah, every border meeting, it never ends. It's like how, you know, in WWE, every contract signing ends with someone going through the table. It's like the inverse. Every meeting at border ends with everyone respectfully standing up from the table and saying, good meeting, boys, let's go break.
You know how, like, the Gotei 13, the 13 court guard squads, seem completely incompetent at their jobs from every moment you ever get to see them, you know, as an organization trying to do stuff. Border is, like, the exact opposite of them, where it's like, they have to have their shit together, so they do.
Yeah. It makes sense how this organization runs in the real world, as opposed to, like, I have the most powerful flame sword, and then thus, the best to be leader.
So Osamu's talking with the rest of Tamakoma about what they've got to do, and like, he's kind of worried that they've only got 3 matches left. Both Chika and Yuma are much more optimistic. Yuma points out, you know, we've got Husei with us, and Chika says, you know, we've been aiming to be in the top 2 of B rank from the start to begin with. And then Husei chimes in saying, there's nothing to be worried about. You've done exactly what I requested. You have your end of the deal, so I will fulfill mine. Very respectful, little bit from him. It's like, you know, you got me on the team. You didn't have me sacrifice any of my knowledge just as I asked for some good stuff. And he says, you know, we'll make a way team, and I'll help do it for my own sake as well. And someone's like, yeah, welcome to the team. And then Yuma says, remember to call Osamu captain. You never call him captain.
I think he does.
He does it occasionally, but...
I like that note of, like, you gotta call him captain.
We cut back inside the meeting room as one of them is talking with someone that we're talking. They're like, you know, switching the topic earlier, was that planned? And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, Osama pulled a trick by switching the topic around. So when he asked you if you would be the leader of the expedition, what you would do. And he changed the flow of the conversation, like, you know, Natsuki did. And they're like, huh. He's getting kind of crafty then. And they're like, is he?
Yeah.
Was that really a big deal that he
beat? I still feel like there's a lot of emphasis being made on what seemed like a relatively simple argument. But I do like that Osamu's... he's playing the Game of Thrones a little bit there. He's playing the politics of things. He's no Ned Stark, Nick. He's not going to tell Cersei that he knows their kids are bastards. Dumb old
he's
Ned
not going to trust. He's not going to trust Littlefinger, who tells him not to trust anyone.
Yeah. Tells him specifically he probably shouldn't trust me.
You really shouldn't trust me. Especially with Ava. I really want to bang your wife. Really shouldn't trust me.
Ned Stark, I trust
you.
Ned Stark, you don't understand. You shouldn't be trusting me, Littlefinger. Would I? My awesomely change in accent and my Ford Fiesta that I use to get around Westeros in ridiculously quick time.
I just play the little ditzy on my ocarina in order to fast travel.
It's an interesting chapter. I found it kind of strange that we have three matches left, because they're already rank 4.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably their next opponent's going to be at least one of them is the number 1 ranked team, and maybe number 2. Essentially the same fight they had last time. So I'm guessing they're going to have to lose somewhere in here, or they're just going to win this one and be like rank 2 already, and it's just like, well, we can skip these other two matches though, right?
It's going to be interesting to see exactly how they balance that. Yeah.
And how they put Yusei into this. Let's go early prediction, Nick. If you had to pick 3 members of the B-rank squads that are going to join them in this mission, like 3 solo agents that join them, who would you take? We'll see who can get closer on this.
Kagayura.
Damn.
What's the name of that guy who can copy people?
Ko? The guy with the shield? Damn. Took another one.
Azami.
Okay. I'm going to go under the assumption that Ninomiya makes it already.
Right. That's why I didn't choose him, because his squad is probably going to make it.
Damn, you took all the people I wanted. Fuck. I don't want to say Katori. She wouldn't make sense to join.
Nah, not at this point.
Toma's in a big rank. Damn, you took all the people I wanted. Nasu. I'll put Nasu in there.
No, oh, okay. I kind of see her squad making the cut, though.
Yeah. Well, I don't... she's an individual.
What's that one guy from their first rank war? The guy who...
Suwa? The guy with... Oh, Arafune?
With the baseball cap, yeah.
Yeah, Arafune. I don't see him making it in there. I mean, he's good at combat tonight, but I think his big thing was that he was going to be teacher to other people. So I don't know if he'd necessarily make it in. Yeah, I'll just go with Nasu for right now. You took my other people. Dick.
Alright, let's do it.
Let's finish it up.
Yep.
Damn, best series. The energy's so low.
I'm sorry. Favorite series this week? Gonna go with My Hero Academia. Honestly, not an exceptionally good week overall for Jump. So I'm going with that, but I'm not exactly happy with my choice.
I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with Black Clover this week. I think My Hero has an awesome week, but I really did like this chapter of Black Clover. And I'm not picking Azuma, Kagayura, and Ko because Nick picked them. I'm trying to go off of I don't go with the same picks Nick made.
Yeah, that's why you failed, though.
You should have done a draft style. That was my issue. Instead of giving Nick the first three picks. And I was just hoping he wouldn't remember characters from World Trigger.
Instead, he remembered the exact three characters that I remembered.
I got Nasu. I got one other.
I'm sorry. I was trying to vote in the poll so I could actually see what won.
My Hero won. Although Black Clover was second.
Mm-hmm. Did you vote for Black Clover?
I didn't put a vote in this week.
I meant that was your series.
My series of the week was Black Clover.
Okay. All right. MVP. Fuck. I don't know.
It's tough because I want to give it partially to All Might because I think it was kind of a cool speech, but at the same time, I'm like, after all the other weeks of giving it to All Might, I kind of feel like I might be overdoing it with trying to give it to him, so I'm going to go with one that just amuses me. I'm going to give it to Alice. I don't know. Put Alice, parentheses, I don't know, in there.
I'm going to go with Noelle.
Yeah, actually, change mine to Noelle.
No, no, it's a back.
Yeah, it's just forever in there at the end of the year. Like, what was this one with Alice, parentheses, I don't know. Was this a song title you came up with? Like, it was.
She did have a really cool moment. Big devastating attack. Paid off.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay, everyone, thank you for joining us here for Weekly Manga Recap. We tend to record the show Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on hitbox.tv/RoloT. You can also follow us on Twitter. He is at RoloT. I'm at YRuler of Time. We are at the BMR Podcast. You can follow those accounts to get updates on when and where we're going to stream, just in case we have a change of plans. Also, be sure to check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. iTunes, where you can leave a comment or rating to help us beat the woodworkers, and also be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you can also watch the video versions of the show. We put those up.
I think that's going to do it for this week, Nick.
Okay.
I think next week we'll hopefully be coming in with Murcielago, and we should hopefully be getting a more concrete idea on when Bleach is going to be ending exactly. And once that happens, we're going to be able to give you more concrete information on how we're going to be celebrating that, so to speak. So
we're
going
to be doing something similar to Naruto-vember, which we did when Naruto ended. That should not come as a surprise to you guys, the fact that it's the big shonen series is ending. This is something that's been going on since 2001, mm-hmm. and we've been covering it since the onset of the podcast. So, yeah, we're going to be talking a lot about Bleach as it approaches its ending.
I really am enjoying the idea of calling it Bloggist.
I was trying to think of a proper name for it. I was thinking like Bleach on the Beach. Well, but no, that's that one Omake chapter that they did. So
I
get
that. I like Bloggist.
Bloggist.
That's good. Bye, guys.